Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Bookshop Podcast. Join me as I chat with guests who specialize in topics dear to my heart, the humanities and our environment. Evan Graham Arango holds a JD with a specialization in environmental law from UCLA. He advocates for law and policy changes that support soil health, regenerative agriculture, and small-scale farming. Off the farm, he serves on the advisory board of UCLA Law's Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment, and is a research affiliate with the Resnick Center for Food, Law, and Policy. Evan is a passionate advocate, educator, and speaker. Hi, Evan, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Mandy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Can you explain what the term regenerative agriculture means, please?
Well, yeah, I'll try my best. But one thing about this term that I love is that it can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. And I think of it more as a movement. It's a movement towards soil health, and it's a movement towards local food, and it's a movement towards a more resilient food system. Those are sort of the broad themes that I think of as encompassing regenerative agriculture. But, you know, and then it boils down to a set of actual practices. So those things I just listed are kind of the big theory overview sort of topics, but then it comes down to our actual growing practices and our farming practices. And that's where things like no-till come in, and minimizing soil disturbance, keeping the soil covered as often as possible, growing a wide diversity of plants and animals instead of just monocropping single varieties. Yeah, and just trying to essentially farm in a way that understands ecology and understands how nature works and how natural systems work. And yeah, take those lessons and see how we can implement them into actual agriculture, which when it comes to agriculture, food does need to be produced, and it's got to be on a schedule, and it's got to be certain quantities. So the sort of industrial agriculture paradigm has been to take full control of everything with chemicals and machines and tractors. And I see regenerative agriculture as a step back away from that. That's how I think about it.
You hold a JD with a specialization in environmental law from UCLA, and now you're a farmer. Was there a particular moment, a turning point, when you realized working with soil and fruit and vegetables was what you wanted to do?
I knew that growing food brought me solace. That's pretty much why I started growing food in the first place, actually. Just sort of escaping LA, where I was in law school at UCLA, and coming back home to Ojai and working with the soil and growing our own food definitely brought me solace. And that's what attracted me to gardening in the first place. As far as the turning point on when I sort of became a farmer, it wasn't exactly clear, but there was a moment somewhere around halfway through law school where I realized my garden was so big that we couldn't consume all of the food that I was producing, and we couldn't even give it to our friends and neighbors anymore. And I was faced with the decision to either scale back or start calling the local restaurants and chefs and trying to figure out a way to sell the produce. And once you catch the bug for growing your own food, it's hard to scale back. So I decided not to scale back and instead to start selling some of our product. And I guess at that point, I somewhat accidentally became a farmer, and I realized I was running a business and doing law school at the same time, which I wouldn't recommend to anyone. It was a lot of really busy nights and busy weekends. But I guess when you're passionate about something, nothing really stops you.
I remember you told me that there was a time when you were in a lecture and you happened to look down at your hands and they were just stained with soil and fingernails caked with dirt. I guess you were firmly planted in both worlds.
It's an obsession. Plants and soil and growing food, it's really an obsession for me. You know, I spent more hours than I should admit in boring law school classes reading about single stem pruning on tomatoes and compost making. And, you know, without that, I don't know how I would have made it through. But, you know, it was great because I did end up finding a way to take the food and agriculture law classes, and I actually formally specialized in environmental law. So you know, I would only read about gardening and the more boring ones that I needed to get me through the bar exam.
But it was all worth it because now you actually do some work with different agricultural organizations, correct?
Well, I do a couple things to sort of stay involved in the legal community. I find that nonprofits always want my help and advice and insight. And so they'll often come up to me, different nonprofits in sort of the food and agricultural space. And there are some great ones. I have a cool sort of relationship with one. It's called Upward Bound House in LA. I know Courtney, who's their sort of farm director, and they do a bunch of different things, but one of the things that they do is run some sort of urban little garden / kind of farms that feed the community there as part of their nonprofit. And so I've sort of bounced some legal issues off of Courtney and sort of helped her with some of that kind of stuff. And also they're buying seedlings for me too. So that's kind of a cool partnership in both ways. There's another nonprofit that's really focused on food distribution during COVID. They were a group of some restaurant owners and chefs and different people that just saw a huge shortage of food that arose with COVID, and especially in lower income communities and marginalized communities. And they came together and formed a nonprofit. And, you know, I really respect their mission because they were trying to get food from sort of the regenerative farmers and the smaller scale farmers. And they saw what was happening is people were not able to get food. And at the same time, farmers weren't able to distribute food. So somehow someone needed to step in there. So I kind of helped them bounce off a couple ideas. And so I do those two things. And then I also write occasionally for a food law blog. And that kind of keeps one foot in the legal world. But both my hands are in the soil. And I'm definitely more farming than I am being a lawyer now.
And I remember about a year ago now when we all went into lockdown, you were so kind and generous in giving boxes and boxes of your beautiful organic produce to the community. And I was one of the lucky recipients. For a while, I'd pick up boxes at the farm and then drop food off to different members of the community. Do you remember how many pounds of food you donated?
It must have been in the thousands, I think.
It was a lot of food.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we had some avocados, I think, and citrus and different fruits that add up a lot of weight.
And a lot of lettuce.
Yeah. Lettuce was a big one that we donated. Lettuce is popular. Everybody loves lettuce.
That's true. And it's healthy. Now, speaking about communities, how can individuals pave the way for their local communities and the wider collective to grow the idea of regenerative farming?
So I think the big one is I would really recommend educating yourself about food in general. People have forgotten a lot of the basics that we really had no choice but to understand for so many years, like how long does food last and what really needs to be cold and how to prepare different things. And, you know, now in this sort of quick, fast food, convenience food type of world that we live in, people have forgotten a lot about that. And when I bring people to the farm, I often find that they have no concept of where a lettuce comes from or what it looks like or how it's harvested or how it's grown. They think these products just sort of appear out of thin air in the same form that they're in at the grocery store with no dirt on them, with a rubber band, and they're cut and tidy and packaged into the right form. And so learning and educating yourself about what food is, you know, what do we eat as humans? They're plants, they're animals, they're funguses, you know, what can we eat? What can we not eat? A lot of people don't know much of this stuff. And I think the more educated you get about that, inherently, the more you care, and you're going to care about how it's grown, and you'll learn about how all of our food is tied into our environment and it comes from our soil. And, you know, the plants are photosynthesizing from sunlight energy and using water and nutrients that are in the soil. And anyway, that's what sent me down the whole road of learning about ecology and growing food in a way that felt good to me. It felt like I'm leaving the land in a better way than I found it.
About a year and a half ago, you spoke at a speaker series that Henry Mooney and myself were presenting here in Ojai, California, and the place was packed. It's a great presentation, and I'll make sure to put the link from your website showing that presentation in the show notes so everyone can watch it. In your presentation, you talk about disturbing the soil as little as possible, keeping the soil covered, plant densely, increasing biological diversity, and feeding soil with compost and organic material. So can you walk us through this and the importance of soil health?
Yeah, it's all about soil health. And life in a lot of ways is really all about soil, life on Earth. If you just look at sort of the natural ecology of the Earth, living things die and then they fall to the soil surface. And that could be animals, it could be plants, insects, anything really. And eventually it decomposes on the soil surface. And the decomposition process is a biological process. We're all sort of just food for each other on this food chain. And so as we get eaten, but whether it's by other animals or by worms or by bacteria or even by fungi, at some point we end up decomposed and returned to the soil. And the nutrients that were in animal bodies or plant, even plant leaves or in wood that's fallen to the ground, any of that, is returns to a cycle where it becomes available again for the next plant roots to take up. And so to me, the crux of regenerative farming is understanding ecological systems and how nature works. Because clearly, if you look at forests and rainforests and jungles and prairies, nature has found a way to thrive and to be abundant and to be green and healthy. And so the more we can learn those lessons and incorporate those into our farming systems, the better. But yeah, it ultimately all comes down to soil and a few basic principles to care for your soil and to leave the land in a better place. I mean, that's really what regenerative farming is about, is growing food on a commercial scale, and actually feeding your communities, but doing it in a way that leaves your land in a better state than you found it. And that's certainly not what conventional agriculture has been in this country for, in recent history.
And that segues beautifully into the next question. Is there a future for regenerative farming in the corporate-owned farming industry? And is it something that you're already seeing happening?
Yes, I do think so. It's a little bit tough for several reasons. Regenerative farming really boils down to just a few basic principles. And these principles are essentially to keep the soil covered as much as possible, to disturb the soil as little as possible, and to have diversity going. So, not just monocropping a single species. And those basic principles don't exactly necessarily relate to scale. The principles of regenerative farming aren't don't make a lot of money or don't have a large farm or don't do it in the city or don't do it in really rural environments. The principles are just the principles of soil health, and they come from nature. They're just lessons we've learned from nature. So any farm at any scale can incorporate them. And I like having a very inclusive definition of regenerative farming. If you're a farmer and you care about these basic principles and are doing your best to implement them, I think you're on the right track towards regenerative farming. So yeah, I like to have an inclusive definition. And certainly large-scale agriculture is starting to see the benefits in a lot of ways of doing less soil disturbance. And I'm optimistic, I guess, about the future, but we'll just have to see what happens.
Throughout the pandemic, it certainly appears more people are experimenting with food in their own kitchen. And much of this need came from necessity. If we look at the millions of posts on social media of sourdough bread, for many of us, sourdough bread became a necessity because we were unable to buy yeast and bread was in shortage. People are now raising chickens in their own backyard, so they have eggs. We've only got to look around at our environment to see good things happening. The canals in Venice are cleaner. People are working from home. There's less commuters. And many of those people are cooking, and they might never have cooked before.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I've definitely seen during the pandemic
exactly what you're talking about. People all of a sudden really care about healthy food and local food, and they've seen on the news these disasters with meatpacking facilities. And the COVID really, it exposed a lot of fragility in our food system. And it's fragility that can really be traced back to just the fact that we are so highly centralized in our food system. I mean, the food system is dominated by just a few really large players, and it creates a lot of efficiency and sort of in the policy making and the business structure and just kind of the history of how our food system has developed and gotten here. It's really been because of that constant preference for efficiency. Every time a choice comes up between making a little bit of maybe a safer food system or one that's a little bit more resilient or one that's a little bit better for the environment, on the one hand or on the other hand, creating efficiencies that can get cheaper food, we've just sort of always leaned towards that efficiency and cheaper food one. I don't think COVID is the primary reason why we saw those issues with meatpacking facilities and food waste and farmers wasting food. You know, it was a trigger that was, it exposed an inherent fragility in our system. And I'm hoping that sort of more of the local food movement and the care for resilience, you know, building soil and farming in a way that's sustainable, that really allows us to keep farming the same piece of land instead of destroying it and having to move on to a new one. I'm hoping these lessons stick around.
Let's talk about community gardens in larger cities all over the world. And also for listeners who might be living in a city with either a tiny backyard or no backyard, how can they either support regenerative farming or try it themselves in an urban environment?
My farm is about a half acre in total, including sort of our roads, and we have some fruit trees and different things. And my actual vegetable production space is maybe more like a quarter of an acre or even a little bit less. So when people hear that, they think that's tiny, you know, that can't even be a farm. That's just a garden size. But no, we're very productive on that small space. And because I don't have a lot of land to work with, it's easier for me, and I'm mindful of this, it's easier for me to be regenerative than it is for a very large farm. Not only is it easier, but I actually see the benefits. I really only have this limited soil space to work with, so I have no choice but to improve it. And the more compost I add, and the more cover cropping I do, and the less I disturb the soil, and the more worms I see, the bigger returns I see on my crops. It's easier to grow, things are cleaner, they grow faster. So yeah, I'm very mindful of that. And I kind of like how that links into an urban environment. I mean, a farm of that scale, a quarter acre farm, really could fit into urban areas. Like some nurseries, for example, like I've seen some in LA, and I'm sure they're in other cities, they'll be often under power lines. And I've seen many spaces, and they're nurseries where they sell fruit trees or different types of vegetables for, you know, sale for people to plant in their home gardens. And I've often thought that those spaces are bigger than I would need to start the kind of urban farm that I do. But it does tie into issues of land use then and zoning and property taxes. And so I'm thinking about all these things and trying to do some policy advocacy work on that front too, to make this a reality and make it possible. And for this to succeed, it takes a sort of an interdisciplinary approach. I mean, you have to really have a business mindset and know how to run a small business, and then also know how to farm at the same time and know how to deal with the policy issues and complicated issues of zoning. And so I'm optimistic about it, but it is complicated.
Imagine if we had tiny housing communities in urban areas with community gardens. That would just be fantastic.
That would be really cool. I know someone, a farmer in Arizona who partners with developers, and he's done, I think, a couple of these projects where he's sort of pitched to the developers, hey, instead of making a golf course as your main amenity for your development, why don't we make a small scale organic farm? And it'll service the community there, and it'll look pretty, and it'll be a feature. And he's done that successfully a couple times. I think that's a really cool model.
It sounds fantastic. Now, one other thing I want to mention to listeners is something that I learned from you, and that is vertical growing, which is really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. You know, my sort of gardening start out was in an urban and really in an urban environment in LA where I just had a little backyard while I was in law school. I was just determined I'm going to grow my own food, you know, no matter what, I'm going to do it, even if I don't have the space or whatever. And, you know, having those physical limitations on your scale, it actually really forces you to become a good gardener. And so it forces you to think about, you know, putting your tall plants on the north side so that they don't shade the smaller plants that are below that, and trellising the tall plants so that they're nice and straight and tidy and don't take up a bunch of room. I try to keep that sort of really just intense efficiency, even on my larger scale now that I farm. And it's really a mindset more than anything. No matter how big my farm is, even if my farm someday was 100 acres, I would still have the same mindset of absolutely maximizing it. And one thing I'm always proud of is how small my farm is. I'm not proud of how big it is. I'm proud of how small it is. And when people see my numbers and how productive I am, you know, they probably think my farm is much larger acreage-wise than it actually is.
Evan, as you mentioned earlier, the natural process of composting in a forest, for example, takes years. But you speed up this process. Can you explain how you do this on your farm, please?
I take materials like grass clippings and animal manures and wood chips and straw and leaves, and I look at how they decompose in nature. And in nature, they decompose very slowly, but nature is on its own slow time frame, and so it works great. I need a little quicker because I'm growing vegetables. So I make my compost piles with these different layers of organic materials. I use bacteria and fungi and worms and just different life to break down that material a little bit more quickly than it might happen in nature.
And education is one branch of Ojai Roots. Can you tell us about that, please?
Well, it's very encouraging to me to see people wanting to learn about this stuff, whether they're home gardeners or they want to, you know, be aspiring farmers. I'm really interested in educating farmers that want to change their practices. You know, I really feel for the farmers that know what they're doing isn't right for their soil, and they know it, but they're stuck in this paradigm where they have invested all this equipment and they're growing in a certain way and their markets are set up. And, you know, once you get going, it's tough to change course. So I want to be there to help educate them on how to do that. And also I love helping to educate home gardeners and small scale farmers. And so how we mostly do that is through a few different ways. I always give PowerPoint presentations. I gave one recently at the World Ag Expo, which would have been great to do in person, but it was Zoom now, of course, because of COVID. So I do PowerPoint presentations. I give talks at different places, and my Instagram for the farm is the best place to stay current on what's going on. That's where I put all my trials and sort of everything that I document goes up there. Little videos and clips go up there. And for anyone that wants to get in touch, I would encourage them to go check out Ojai Roots on Instagram. That's a great way to get a hold of me. And that's where I try to do the majority of my educational work.
I know you're super busy working on the farm, but do you have any other projects you'd like to see come to fruition regarding regenerative farming?
Well, one project that I have had on my mind, and this project actually came up, the idea for it first came up for me when I was in law school. I was doing some clinical work, which is essentially free legal work where we get training sort of in exchange for doing the legal work for an organization. And this clinic, I was working for an organization called LandCorps, and they're a 501c3 nonprofit organization that supports soil health legislation. And that's becoming a big topic now, and it can mean a lot of different things. But there's a big push for a lot of different stuff, including carbon sequestration and sort of paying farmers that are using regenerative practices to actually sequester carbon and help combat climate change instead of contributing to it. And, you know, there's different legislation about protecting pollinators and about composting and using composting and how it's done and sort of just general, a lot of different legislation. A lot of it's wrapped up in the farm bill, and a lot of it touched on, you know, organic farming and a lot of the practices that I was doing on my own farm. And so I was doing work, you know, legal work for LandCorps at the same time as making my little farm. And I saw sort of an overlap between these two, where it piqued my interest in maybe one day doing sort of a legal and policy handbook towards like, how can the government or how can regulators help the regenerative farming movement? And what does it actually look like to sequester carbon in your soil? And what does it look like to promote pollinators? And, you know, how does that actually improve our environment in a tangible way that farmers might be able to get rewarded for someday? So that's a project that's on my mind.
I think the concept of mixing the legalities of regenerative farming and your beautiful visuals of the actual process and your farm is a great idea.
Yeah, something more tangible. Because when I was doing this legal work for the nonprofit, I did realize that, you know, some of these bills around, whether it's around carbon sequestration or the actual environmental benefits of increasing organic matter in your soil, it's tough, it's complicated, it's somewhat scientific, it's hard to wrap your mind around it, especially if you don't know about farming or have a farming background. And I just think that I'm able to communicate in a way that, you know, since I have my foot kind of in both worlds here, that it would be a valuable insight. And I also have a lot of photos and just a beautiful farm that could really show what I'm talking about.
It seems like a fantastic opportunity for a publisher right there.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject of books, is there one book or an author that you would like to suggest people read if they're interested in the topic of regenerative farming?
I would encourage anyone to check out Michael Pollan's work, for sure. So The Omnivore's Dilemma or any of Michael Pollan's work is fantastic.
And thank you so much once again for helping the community out as you did through COVID by donating so much of your delicious produce.
Thanks, Mandy. I appreciate that. And I'm just really grateful that we were able to get all that food out and to help so many people. And we got so much positive feedback. And it's an inherently rewarding thing to do, to growing food for the community. It's great. So,
and where can we buy your produce here in Ojai and Ventura County or even LA?
We are expanding business and we're always looking for new partnerships. We've sort of done a lot of different things, from selling boxes directly to people to selling to Rainbow Bridge and Farmer and the Cook and Westridge. This is all local to Ojai. If any Ojai listeners are listening, they'll know these names. If not, it'll sound a little foreign. But yeah, we're always looking to form new partnerships. And especially, you know, it's really about local food. It's grown in Ojai, and I would love for all of our product to stay in Ojai if possible. So if anyone, you know, if you're a chef listening, or you know of someone at a local restaurant or the produce manager at a local Ojai grocery store, please reach out to us and we'd be happy to get in touch. Yeah. And our email, I'll add, is ojairootsfarm@gmail.com.
Evan, thank you so much for being on the show and taking time away from the farm. I think you've been working about 16 hours today, so thank you so much. And I'd just like to remind everyone to go to ojairootsfarm.com and check out the videos and the photographs, all the information that Evan has on that site, and at ojairoots on Instagram. I'll make sure to put all of these links in the show notes. Thanks again, Evan.
Yeah, likewise, Manny. Thanks for having me on.